Shut off from this, many stoop to sins that will keep them in real darkness for years. People who have a high sense of reverence will always be found to be the builders of happy homes, if they are allowed to follow the dictates of love. These words are not written of those who have a high sense of religion, but who are base hypocrites. This class will follow sensuous pleasures wherever they are placed. Many a poor conscientious priest is eating his heart out in hopeless love for a pure woman. Oh! If he only had the courage to leave the church and create for himself a heavenly spot upon earth, how much happier he would be through all eternity. This cannot last many years longer. For a powerful band upon the spirit side of life are organizing to tear this barrier to real happiness away. They are not enemies of the Catholic Church but its best true helpers. It is decidedly wrong to hold within its thrall so many thousands of good men and women. Replace the black robes with the white ones, take away the privacy of the convents and monasteries. Stop the thousands of dollars that are pouring into its coffers, and you have taken away the incentive for the hypocritical ones to impose upon those who are sincere and honest. As I said before, there are hundreds of pure men and women in the service of the Catholic Church who are literally bearing a cross so heavy that they will feel the weight of it for years and years after they enter spirit life. Be not deceived, my brothers and sisters. The spark of love within your heart that so often becomes a consuming flame, is a part of divinity itself, and not of the devil, as you have been taught. True love desires that only the brightest and happiest things of earth, and heaven too, for that matter, shall surround the object of its affection. Signed, Jose 357. Ralph announced at last seance, returns this evening and talks to Mr. and Mrs. Leavitt, his parents, until they clearly recognize that it must be their son, grown in spirit, from the age of 1 year, his age at death, to what he would have been had he remained in the physical the intervening 22 years, but he now promises them, to endeavor to have given to them some written message or picture before they leave for their home. Seance number 22, September 12, 1900, to Narcotics Tobacco 358. After the usual preliminaries there came forth to visible condition a spirit form, whom the circle did not recognize, but after some effort to vocalize finally pronounced his name as being Ezra Cooper, and then began talking with seeming great effort at first, but his speech grew better as he proceeded until he spake in good clear oral voice, altogether as follows, to wit, it is strange how some people have so many strange notions and do so many queer things and sometimes act so foolishly. It is quite different over here with us, after we fully awake we do not do so much that way. So many things on earth, thought to be so essential there, are found here to have been only unnecessary, filthy, and often, injurious habits. We can do without some of those things and habits on this side. When you get over here you will find you can do without tobacco. I use tobacco when on earth, and I suppose my case exhibits about a fair sample of the habit, and I found it, sometimes, a very inconvenient habit. At one time my wife got ready to go to church before I was ready and she said, Ezra, why, are you not ready yet? It is high time to be going now. All right, I said, and went into the dressing room, exchanged clothing and we were off in a little bit, but had hardly passed the yard gate, when I must have a good, old-fashioned chew of tobacco. Rushing my hand down I found I had left it in my other pocket. I says, wife, I must go back a moment. I have forgot my pocketbook. She says, well, do hurry, we shall be so late. And I hustled back, gathered up my old pants, and in my excitement, instead of taking the tobacco out, I began putting on the old pants, and wife squalls out, Ezra, what in the world are you doing? Why don't you come along? And I rushed out, fixing up as I went. And my wife says, why, Ezra, are you gone crazy, putting the old pants over your Sundays? And I looked at myself and rushed back, took off the old pants, but got the tobacco into my Sunday pockets and sailed out, and away we went. As we sped along I took on a good size quid and had it in good style for expectoration by the time we were seated in the church house, and soon began to look about for the spittoon that was usually at our feet in the church but this time gone. My wife says, Ezra, what is the matter with you today? You are so fidgety. I says, oh, I was just trying to get a comfortable position. But the saliva accumulated and I was about to expectorate and my wife says, Ezra, don't spoil that carpet and I had to swallow. Presently, I began to sicken and to look about for a way out. But the aisles were all crowded full of people and there was no way out, in time to save me, and I began to gag, and wife says, are you sick, Ezra? And I says, I guess there was a fly in that ice cream we had just before starting, and this lie provoked the whole mess of tobacco to go down, and oh, so sick, and groaning, and the people thought I had got religion, but I was awful sick and the carpet accepted the terrible load off my stomach. Then I felt relieved, but my poor wife didn't. However, Ezra Cooper got over it, and never chewed again. 359. Many persons would be prone to think this manner of putting such a matter, too sacrilegious for anything. The idea that a spirit should return to visibility and talk in such foolish manner is too preposterous and absurd to think about. A spirit from on high, it may be said, would not talk in any such nonsensical way as that. But why not? Let us ask. Is not this method of propaganda work among all moral teachers of earth considered the most efficacious manner of presenting the foolishness of any intemperate or immoral habit? And why should such method be any the less efficacious if presented by a spirit as an incidental experience during the mortal career of the relating spirit? Then again, how shall we know that alleged spirits are such and the personages they claim to be, unless they talk and act and present the general mannerisms as people on earth do, and as the persons they claim to be? The reader of this volume and of its two predecessors, R. V. and B. V., will surely observe the great effort set up and prove the personality by presenting the identical characteristics of the human family and of the individual spirit in each case until there is, in the three volumes, evidence upon evidence aggregating to mountain heights, incontrovertible and insurmountable, of the fact, that the intelligences communing were just what they claim to be, or to have been. And why not an intelligent messenger even from quite an unfolded condition still remember, and to a useful purpose, relate incidental experiences of his or her earth life that would, to them, be foolishness now, if the design is to illustrate a moral lesson thereby. And it is on this line of consideration that these mirthful experiences were given, and for the same reason retained in the book. And furthermore, this introduction to the theme being followed by a very sedate article of Dr. Reed on another branch of the same theme, makes it all the more apropos. Opium Brave Hearts Association of In-Spirit Life for Suppression of Opium Habit. 360. Dr. Reed visits their work and makes the following report of it in writing. To wit, can you not tell the members of our circle something about your work in spirit life? I asked of the member of the Brave Hearts who visited you on Tuesday night. She said, come with me and see for yourself, you then can explain to others. And the following is what I know so far of the Brave Hearts. A. The organization of the Brave Hearts is a very large and powerful one, and owes its existence to the efforts of a wise Chinese philosopher. Its membership is not confined to the Chinese race but accepts any spirit who is willing to engage in their work. The only requisite being harmony of thought and steadfastness of purpose. Their work lies among the so-called drug fiends of earth and in the spirit world. The father of the organization, when I made my wants known to him, said, I might talk to you and tell you of many wonderful things, but if you will accompany me to the earth plane I will show you the practical side of our work. I signified my willingness and we set forth upon a journey that was destined to show me a life I had hitherto known nothing of. B. The first place we entered was dark and squalid. It had rough bunks around the walls, and the most of them were occupied by armed-eyed devotees of opium. The lights were dim, coming only from the opium lamps that resembled night lamps more than anything else, with the exception that peanut oil, instead of kerosene, was used. The most of the smokers were using acid of dape, instead of the hop toy round home, from boxes used for holding their opium. Their bamboo pipes held to their lips, or lying by their side, according to the degree of stupefaction reached. My guide told me that only in isolated cases does the use of opium produce visions good or bad. The smoking brings to the smoker a sense of tranquility and content. Poor wretches, they looked anything but tranquil, with eyes dimmed, almost to blindness, as they gazed lazily about them. I noticed many beautiful spirits about the room and all wore the badge of the Order of the Brave Hearts, a golden heart, set with a topaz. See, these spirits were trying to persuade other spirits to leave the atmosphere that was so polluted with the drug, or were endeavoring to impress those still in the body to stop the disgusting habit before it was too late. I was astonished to find that success often attended their efforts. D. Come, my guide said, I will take you among people of your own race. Surely, I said, we will only be able to find very few of my people who are victims of the drug. My guide smiled a sad, sweet smile, and slowly shook his head and said, opium smoking is gaining ground in the United States and should be looked upon with feelings of alarm. 361. The use of opium contributed more to the downfall of the Chinese Empire than any other one cause. We stood in a luxurious apartment, furnished with oriental couches and draperies, swinging lamps of peculiar designs, lit up the oriental scene, with a soft light. Men and women, partially disrobed, reclined on the couches, with the fatal bamboo pipes by their sides. Here, too, I noticed spirits wearing the emblem of the Brave Hearts. They remonstrated with spirits and attendants. A. Come, my guide said, and I will take you to a private home and show you how the poppy, with her flaunting danger signal, is able to hold sway over a home that would otherwise be happy. We entered the portals of a rich man's home. In a room that was sumptuously furnished, was a woman in negligee dress preparing to smoke opium. My guide turned to me and said, my friend, I understand that you are well versed in spirit chemistry, can you not make the spirit who stands by the couch, visible to this poor unfortunate one? I found that the occupant of the room possessed wonderful materializing powers, although unconscious of it, and the soft red lights, on the dressing table, being just suited to the work, I collected as rapidly as possible, sufficient material to clothe the spirit with a material body, and she advanced toward the opium smoker. A piercing shriek rent the stillness of the room and she cried, Mother! Oh, my mother! Come back from the dead to save me from being an opium fiend, my darling child! Her mother replied, sin no more and unable to hold her form longer, she slowly dematerialized at her daughter's feet. The daughter sprang up and gathering up the paraphernalia of the opium smoker tossed it out of the window. B. Come, my guide said, this has repaid me many times for any trouble I have had, or may have, on our journey tonight. It grows later and there are many things you must see ere another day dawns. We then visited morphine, cocaine and absinthe fiends, listened to their wild stories of delightful visions or hideous dreams. As the hours sped along toward the rising of the sun, the police of the great cities of the opiate eaters began to gather the poppy fiends in. See, we visited the prisons where many of these unfortunates were confined, and listened to their pitiful pleadings, or wild ravings, when deprived of the use of their pet drug. Poor, unfortunate human beings, torn by wild beasts, or consumed by fiery flames, would not be worse than the tortures they suffered. D. Countless numbers, I was told, began the use of drugs through the administering of small doses, by physicians, to alleviate pain. My guide said, I would that I had the power to stop the use of all drugs that rob mortals of their senses and sap their mental and physical energy. It is better, by far, to stand a few hours of suffering than to become a slave to a bad habit and spend not only years in the earth life, but many years in the spirit world trying to rid themselves of the habit. If physicians would live the right kind of lives and understand the forces that surround them, they would not have to resort to the use of drugs to deaden pain, but could give to their patients a sense of forgetfulness that would be far superior to any state produced through the use of drugs. E. Could mortals see the scene I am showing you tonight, they would refuse to allow their friends to be placed under the influence of any narcotic. See the poor wretch in yonder cell, how he fights off the imaginary insects and reptiles that surround him. Notice how great drops of cold sweat break out all over his body. Could there be a worse hell than this? I looked at the cell he indicated. The figure of a man, or what had once been a man, lay on the hard prison cot, struggling with delirium tremens. Two spirits, members of the Brave Hearts, were endeavoring to soothe him, while spirits from the lowest plane leered at them from the dark corners. I looked at the poor man carefully, and saw that it was only the question of a few hours until he, too, would be released from the clay, and turned and followed my guide from the prison. By this time the day was breaking. The rays of the sun were lighting up the dark places, and I found myself wishing for perpetual sunshine, forgetting that darkness is as essential as light. I said to my guide, "If tonight's visits are a fair sample of your work, you and your band have more than earned the title of Brave Hearts. Think, my friends, this band is composed of spirits who need not enter the atmosphere of Earth, at any time, unless they so desire. I trust you will profit by the example given you by the Brave Hearts, and seek those who need your aid, no matter how low their condition." Signed, Dr. Reed, 362. A lady messenger whispered of her work and of conditions that she meets in spirit life, substantially, as follows, to wit, "I am a messenger from higher spheres into the Earth's envelope to oversee certain cases that come within my mission, part of which is to meet them, place them, and see that they are properly cared for. And this task consumes much of my time, as you would say, and my energies too. For so many thousands cross to this side, having no preparation whatever to fit them to advance over here. Many of them have but few opinions fixed, and many others have opinions fixed, so that if the opinion be erroneous, it is very difficult of modification, and still others of an inquiring disposition are free to learn and anxious to know. You have heretofore been told of the methods of teaching used in spirit life, and of the vast difference of adaptability between the individuals of the various classes. And there are also the same differences pertaining to the adaptability of teachers to the various necessities of the different pupils." 363. Many spirits are so attached to Earth that it is difficult to have them believe that in spirit realms are more beautiful and desirable homes than any on Earth. Hence, in order to present inducements for them to turn away from earthly attractions, it is necessary to open the way and lead them to various homes and conditions in the spheres above or beyond them. And to do this requires emissaries from those higher realms, and it is part of my calling to assist in this primary work. And so myself and comrades take charge of cases that are in need of such travel as will acquaint them with the fact of the superlative grandeur of the homes beyond. 364. And so I lead my charges out into the great spirit world, and when I show them the beautiful buildings, the gorgeous landscapes as we pass from plane to plane, we hold a moment at some scene more magnificent than they ever beheld or could behold on earth. I ask, "Is not that beautiful?" "Oh, yes," they say, "but not so attractive as some on earth." We go on from glory to glory, and they gradually desire to see and know more as the grandeur increases, until their desires are turned away from earthly things to the more glorious realities of the spirit world, and finally, they realize how great the chasm between their actual condition and the beautiful conditions of the homes to which they would be pleased to attain. And now they are led back to the lower conditions, and witnessing the great contrast, they are prepared for such experiences in lower spheres as will prepare them for permanent homes in the higher, and are able to look away from earth and desire to attain the higher, and are thus prepared to advance under the tutorship of such guides as are suited to the individual case. From this you may know that all kinds of conditions reach us, and that therefore there is employment for many thousands of messengers. 365. Denton spake a moment, saying that conditions are not favorable for as much matter as we might like this evening. We think not best to give all science, for some will read who are not on a scientific plane. We must try to accommodate the common mind. In this, however, some will say it is not from higher spheres, but investigation will teach them differently, for it is simple facts. Proof in simple terms is what people want. I hope that you who know will present such facts in whatever crude manner, so that those on the road of ignorance may be able to receive and comprehend the same. Then they will be able to know of the life that never ends. They need simple lessons of both physical and spiritual conditions and their mutual relations, and many an aching heart may know there is continuous life and that the conditions of those gone before are accessible, and the father and the mother and the dear friends may know where the idolized little ones have gone. 366. An Italian lady spake to considerable length, in her native tongue, just after the messenger's spirit, but only a few words of what the Italian lady said were understood, and Bessie, being asked to find an interpreter, said, that Italian lady was talking of people who go to spirit life expecting to find and meet, face to face, that man they call God. She told of how she had failed to find him, and of how difficult it sometimes is to disabuse one's mind of that delusion, and how this affords a calling for certain philanthropic spirits. Seance number 23, September 14, 1902. 367. During the secretary's reading, Redfeather called him down on his report of Ezra Cooper's anecdote concerning Ezra's tobacco habit, and Redfeather's proposed amendments of the record prevailed. If the circle pass an error of the minutes, every essentially needed correction is noticed by the spirits, so that the record as passed must be substantially correct, if not entirely verbatim. After the ordinary preliminaries were completed, the first item that seems important to notice was that, to the question upon what do spirits subsist, Professor Denton replied orally, 368. We subsist upon the essence of the substance that sustains people while in the physical life. This question you will find fully answered in Rending the Veil. Pars. 1610-1614, 369. When people can understand the causes and effects of the habits of opium fiends, they will refrain from becoming contaminated by such habits. 370. Many people think they are in harmony with themselves and neighbors, when in fact they are neither one. 371. Over here, we move from plane to plane of unfoldment unceasingly onward, but we do not reach perfection, though, of course, after many years of your time an inhabitant of spirit life may reach to a great degree of purity and knowledge and wisdom, so far beyond earthly attainments that, should they return to you and undertake to tell and illustrate to you of their superior conditions, you would not be able to realize the grandeur and glory of the many more than an infant in its little crib would comprehend a speech upon the glories and mysteries of the physical universe. And yet, none are perfect, none ever reach perfection. Perfection is out of the question. Nevertheless, the better the lives you live, the better it will ever be for you. For every deed that transpires in your lives is written, indelibly written, in your own psychic ether and open to your own gaze and whatever spirit be passing by. R. V. 2541-2556, A. Every effort you make in trying to improve your spiritual and higher nature will always be to your credit, and every victory over selfishness and temptations is emblazoned on your banner in shining light, and every wrong thought or act toward yourself or neighbor is written in dark lines and shadows. Therefore, ever strive to do well and think well. 372. Loose Moccasin dictated a writing to the spirit Wesley Abba as follows, to wit, many great suns ago when the great white-winged birds came sailing out of the east bringing to the hunting ground of the Indian, white men, whose arms were so long that they must have room, more room, all the time, until they crowded the Indian out. 373. Loose Moccasin lived in peace and happiness with his tribe. If the braves with pale faces had not been mistaken for messengers from the Great Spirit, the land of the Indian would still be his own. How often a single mistake means the undoing of many people. 374. The land of the Indian once had other people and they took the trail to the happy hunting grounds. So it will be with the pale face. 375. The happy hunting ground has been the home of Loose Moccasin for so many great sons that the journey back seems tiresome. He has journeyed far and has learned many things, but many things that belong to Loose Moccasin upon earth were hard to get rid of. 376. For many great sons his work was among the pale faces. This was to teach him love for all. And many pale faces will find that they must work among those with the faces of night before they reach the home of Loose Moccasin. 377. Loose Moccasin has traveled a long trail. The journey extended through many great suns. He climbed many high mountains and walked through many dark forests, and Loose Moccasin is able to guide many along the trail he blazed. So many grow afraid in the dark places and run back. So Loose Moccasin journeys on without them. After many great suns have passed, they grow braver, and gladly follow the trail Loose Moccasin points out. They cannot go on if someone calls to them out of the darkness, but I must reach for and help them. When they think only of themselves and try to run away from the voices, they lose themselves among the briars, and must call for help. Some must be lost many times before they are brave enough to help others. 378. After they have passed through the dark wood and climbed over great rocks on the mountain sides, Loose Moccasin bids them look back over the trail they have come, and lying below them is a beautiful forest of pine trees signifying the strength they have gained by passing under its shadows. They turn and look before them, and stretching away lies a green, undulating plain, with clump of trees and sparkling rivers of water. They start forth with hearts filled with joy, thinking how easy will be the journey across this plain, but they soon find the soft green grass hides many sharp thorns and that the rivers are deep with treacherous undercurrents that, if they are not expert swimmers, will drag them down. Many sit down on the bank and refuse to follow Loose Moccasin as he leads the way and shows them how easy it is to breast the current. He must go on with those who follow, if only one, leaving the timid ones for someone else to guide. 379. After journeying many great suns, they reach the top of the highest mountain, and as Loose Moccasin bids his followers look back, they see they have traveled through a most beautiful country, and that the mountains that seemed so high were remorse, selfishness and ambition, and that the undercurrents were sensuous desires, and that the thorns were public opinion, and they see too that the heavy burdens they have struggled so long to carry alone were pride and avarice. They see, also, how the load lightened each time they put forth a helping hand to aid a fellow traveler, until now the weight is not perceptible. They turn and follow Loose Moccasin, and far away in the valley below, they see the lights of their homes shining through many windows, sending forth a promise of peace and rest to the traveler. After a season of rest, they are willing to do as Loose Moccasin, travel back the long trail and guide others in safety to their homes. 380. They know the trail before them is a long one, and they know, too, that the homes they now occupy are only stations of rest, that their real homes lie beyond. They are content to wait until Loose Moccasin, or one of his order, will guide the way. In the meantime, they must help others over the trail they have learned to know so well. They learn that things they once thought were their own must be shared with the others before they find the pleasure in them that they desire. 381. Loose Moccasin's wigwam is one of beauty, and bears no resemblance to the one he occupied upon earth. Magnificent paintings adorn the walls, and sweet music is played by a mechanical instrument that seems to bear one away to the earth home of Loose Moccasin. One seems to see the old warriors gathered together in the council lodge, and can hear the patter, patter at the moccasined feet of little children, as they chase each other in and out among the lodges, and can see the boys practicing with bow and arrows, showing how powerful they will be when they become warriors. 382. Then the music changes, and the scene changes to that of a still night. All the camp is wrapped in slumber, and the wind gently sighs among the tall pines, and whispers words of security to the dusky children resting in their shadows. All is peace. No sound, except the occasional hoot of an owl, disturbs the stillness, and the feeling of peacefulness and rest steals over the traveler, and the lights and music of Loose Moccasin's wigwam seem far distant, and he who has so fully shared with others stillness of the scene, earned a few hours of repose, sinks upon the soft couch and dreams of those he must lead to this haven of rest. 383. Learn a lesson of fidelity from Loose Moccasin, and begin in the earth life to guide weak ones over the dark trail, and in that way, teach them to be brave enough to guide others, and when the Great Spirit takes you to the happy hunting grounds, the way will not seem dark or lonely. 384.